throughout. I think that's one of the best things. One thing I hate as a customer of other things, nothing to do with our industry, is when you know when you go online and you might be coming up to your Sky TV renewal and they give you a price of, I don't know, £75. And then you go on the telly, you watch the telly, and they say, oh, yeah, new customers only, £45 a month. You call them up and say, I saw an advert for £45 a month, nurse, for new customers only. I hate that.
Well,
So,
of course,
in the same vein, I'd like.
the FCA have banned that. I mean, in
But in a.
insurance, you can no longer do price walking, which is, what they talk about there. But some very valuable point. So come back on your point where you're trying to move somebody from an existing relevant life to a personal policy. Would the insurer be more likely to improve their retention, or is the reality that you're, and it obviously depends how long the existing plan's been in effect. But is that a situation where it just gets easier if the life is still healthy to write a new contract? So are they by. Because I think, one of the problems they're going to say is, well, that's fine, but we didn't write the contract with that options in it at X period of time. I suppose the other thing is we have the sort of 7-year effect. But how would that impact if you come to that situation? Would it improve persistency?
Yeah, and ultimately, it's just whether if there's underwriting things that come into it, then clearly it's a massive issue because they can't get cover elsewhere. But why should, if someone's got a relevant life policy and part of that is that they can move that, why should someone have to take a new policy out? Why should they have to go through the underwriting process, especially with sums assured that are going to result in medicals and doctor's reports and, a lengthy process in that respect? Why should they have to do that? We talk about the 7-year rule and so forth, but not sure that's really what a client would care about. What they care about is that they're receiving a good service from the company that they're paying their money to and continue to pay their money to for many years.
No, excellent point there. Sorry, I had
Right.
another.
Another
Why do
delivery.
all the deliveries come when you're doing your
Is it Christmas,
session?
Ian?
No, that was coffee. I get through too much coffee, too much caffeine. Yeah, excellent. Anybody from an insurer perspective like to add to any of these points? We've had a lot of things asked for. I'd love to give the insurers an opportunity to respond. If not, I'm going to come back to Michelle Lawson again. Michelle, you've made some points about people being disadvantaged when they shouldn't be. Does that come into avoiding better consumer outcomes? Do we look at, or should we be looking at all these things through the lens of better consumer outcomes?
I think we've got the consumer is always the person at the bottom of all of this, isn't there? That none of this should be taken into account other than the consumer, because they're ultimately the ones that are benefiting from all of this. That's why we're doing it. And I just think it's just so bad when policies do evolve naturally, that for like what Lewis was just saying, that it's like, oh yeah, it's the new customers only thing. Even if they were to be given the opportunity to kind of upgrade or be pointed out that that there is a better policy available, or that and the thing is, it's whether they can even just sort of, is it because you've got the guaranteed insurability in a lot of these cases as well. So why can the guaranteed insurability almost like not kick in at that point to kind of put them onto the new upgraded policy? And then it saves the customer time, it saves the broker's time, the client gets the policy that they originally wanted, because there's going to be an element of people that might have medical interventions that mean that they can't actually go anywhere else, they don't have a need to go anywhere else, they might be older, blah blah blah, all the other things that come into play.
Good point. Actually, one question I wanted to ask the advisor community is, are we responding to Consumer Duty as much as we need to in the context, how many advisors today, I know we've frequently, we talk a lot about comparing quality on critical illness, but shouldn't we be comparing quality across the piece? Certainly some of the things that I'm picking up from conversations that myself and various people have had with the Pure Protection Review, there seems to be a bit of alarm that maybe we've got the message on critical illness, but do we need to get the message on looking at value more? How are people looking at quality on those other contracts?
That's subjective, isn't it? Because
okay, all right. Well, it's a thought for everybody. Because if I'm reading the runes right, I think that's one of the areas I've heard people say that the protection industry hasn't realised that consumer duty covers everything. So that's something for everyone to think about. It's probably a point for me to bring back Mr. Taylor Barr to give us some last thoughts before I take us. We're just coming into 9 minutes left. I've got one or two things at the end. But Scott, do you want to come on again and share with us what you'd like to see for next year?
Poor people, me again. Yeah, absolutely, Ian. Next year, so things I'd like to see. Annual statements, please, from all insurers. The most recent AMI viewpoint has even told you what customers want to see in those annual statements. So it's never been easier to do it. Please do it. And please, can those annual statements be written by the marketing team and not the legal department? It needs to be a document that reminds customers of the value of the cover that they have got. It doesn't need to be a 6-page terms and conditions amendment. So please, that would be great. Second thing I'd really like to say, simplified key facts documents. So if somebody has bought income protection, can we please send them a key facts document about income protection? Not a key facts document about life insurance, critical illness cover, income protection, FIB, and send them a 200-page key facts document. All we're doing is providing them a document they're now not going to read that looks scary and complicated. And in the worst case scenario, we're sending them a document that means they're going to think they have all of these things when they probably don't. So let's just send them the key facts that's relevant to the cover they have actually got. And the third one, which I think is feeding very much into what Lewis was saying, more flexible insurance contracts. We are arranging contracts to protect people over maybe a 40-year period. And many of them have zero ability to adapt to customers' changing needs. Now, you cannot tell me that over 40 years, somebody's situation is not going to change. And we get some people have got GIOs built in, other contracts have got separation clauses. It's sporadic. Not all insurers have these things built into their contracts. And have you ever tried to actually use one? It's one thing having it in writing, but if your teams are not trained and able to deliver them at the point they're needed, what's the point? If you ring up an insurer and the person at the end of the phone doesn't even know what a GIO is, there's a problem with training when I've got to tell them what a GIO is and then explain that it is in the contract the client's got. So we really, really need more flexible contracts. We've been talking on these forums before about the fact that consumer duty means we need to be doing more reviews with clients. We've talked about having annual, biannual, 5-yearly reviews, whatever, but much more constant communication with clients. And it would be great if those don't always have to end in a brand new contract, because as people already said, there might be ratings now, exclusions. It would be much, much better to be able to go back to the insurer that's got the contract in place already and say, can we make these amendments because this person's changed their job and they've got better sick pay or worse sick pay or whatever. Flexible contracts would be great. As flexible as you want to make them. Something just, is better than they are.
Just thinking about that, Scott, and as insurers aren't coming to say it, I'm going to say it. I think part of the problem is if you look at the way that they write their reinsurance, typically, and reinsurers, please correct me if I get it wrong, but my understanding is while they might write a 10, 15, 20-year plan with a consumer, they change their reinsurers all the time. So you've got a situation where the longer the policy's been in force, potentially the greater the reinsurance cost. So does that actually mean that there's a need for a fundamental change in the way that insurance and reinsurance interact in this country and the way that we put protection products together? This whole thing has it's not talked about as much as it used to be, but there certainly, when these forums took place in physical meetings and maybe people were prepared to say things that they wouldn't say online, there was a lot of talk about the life industry's dirty little secret, which is that nobody really wants a policy to last more than 7 years, because that's the point at which it becomes less economically profitable for the insurer. Whereas they want it to last 4 years, but they don't want them to last much more than seven. That may not be true for all insurers, and I'm not sure the extent to which FRS 17 might have changed that, but certainly it was a situation. Michelle, do you want to come in and add?
Yeah, I think the 7 year thing is largely because of what the insurers are doing. They're not actually encouraging people to stay with the policies, because they're being where you've got like the historical ones, when we're reviewing it to bring them up to speed to make sure that they've got the policy that they need. If the insurers were to adopt like what Lewis was saying about bringing them, bringing the quality up as the policy goes, that would stop all of that need. And then it would enable them to actually have the insurance policies on the books for longer and avoid that 7 year rule.
But I think you'll find it's to do with their pricing and their profitability. Essentially, they price on the assumption, and anyone from an insurer is welcome to come on and tell me I'm wrong, but my understanding is that there are insurers in the market. I'm not saying it's everybody, but my understanding is insurers price in an assumption that persistency will only be a certain level. And if a policy stays in force too long, it's more likely to result in a claim with the adverse economics that brings. Okay, no one from an insurer is going to come on. Maybe we'll talk to you offline about how we can get this more out into the open. Thank you, everybody. Firstly, to all our speakers today, you've been tremendous. Secondly, to all our speakers throughout 2024. Just a quick mention for Protection Guru Pro, if anybody is looking for a service that gives you the comparison of quality and price, i.e. value, across the whole protection marketplace. Key benefits, go and have a look at our website anytime you like. I will call out, we do have a Consumer Duty Alliance session on the 16th of December. Three tremendous speakers, Lee Thomas, Carol Powell and Andrew Pinto, joining. But if any of you would like to join and share your experience with wealth advisors, you will be very welcome. And then don't forget advisorsoftware.com and Benefits Guru that we run. And there you can see the agenda for 2025. Again, thanks also to all our delegates that have been part of these sessions this year. I hope you found it really useful. Don't forget, 9th of January, you want your compliance people on that session. I promise you, it'll be really valuable in changing opinions. And with that, I'm going to end with less than a minute to go.